welcome back to the EY Ireland Business Podcast. My name is Rupert Heather, your host, and today I am joined by David Roberts, Frank Daly and Joe Carden, who've all agreed to join us to talk about the future of healthcare here. Joe, I'll just start with you. Can you just tell us who you are and a little bit about yourself?
Thank you, Rupert. I am a director of the Irish healthcare practice. I've been here in Ireland for 2 years delivering major reform. I've also worked in Australia and in Singapore with EY, delivering major transformation programs.
Excellent.
Good to meet you, Rupert. Dave Roberts, I'm the global healthcare leader for EY, based out of London. Spend most of my time on an aeroplane travelling around various healthcare systems around the world. So I'd love to bring some of those insights to your listeners today.
Excellent.
Hi, Rupert. Good morning. I'm Frank Daly. I'm a medical doctor. I've been with EY for about a year. Prior to that, I was a clinician, emergency physician. I worked and trained in Australia, the UK and the US. And then I became very interested in service improvement and patient safety. And then I was a health service CEO.
Wow. Okay, so it would appear to me that between David, Frank and Joe, we've probably experienced which spans practically the whole globe here. You've come from Perth in Western Australia, I understand, and you've been kind of, you work in the Oceania side of, what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, so I'm based in Perth, Western Australia, and my job is basically to support the health advisory practice across Oceania, which is Australia, New Zealand, parts of the Pacific. But I also do some work in the Asia-Pacific zone, and like here, I'm in the island for a few days to help out here as well.
And David, where does that plane journey take you typically? Where would you go to work on the projects that you're involved in?
So importantly, I'm a client partner here in Ireland with Neve colleagues on the ground here. But largely, I spend a good chunk of my time in the US, Canada, mainland Europe. Asia Pacific is a really important region for us in the Middle East. So pretty much everywhere, but our core markets are those that I've just mentioned. And we've got dramatic growth. We've got clients who are experiencing quite transformational changes at the moment, adopting and embracing new technologies, building new infrastructure, changing the way their practices are. So it takes us everywhere. And that's the breadth and width now that we find EY as a health business is actually engaged in.
Okay, so let's bring this back to the Irish context, Joe. I mean, David and Frank are here to talk about, to engage in hospital commissioning project in Ireland and talk broadly about some of the initiatives that are going on here. If you like, what's the background? What's the context for this? Where is Ireland at the moment in terms of its healthcare provision?
Well, I think Ireland's at a very exciting point of its reform. There are three key areas that are driving that, or three key references that have been developed in the last few years. The first is the Sláinte Care report, which really sets the foundation for reform for the next 10 years for Ireland. And there is a dedicated commitment to that with a team and leadership already established. There's also the National Development Plan for the whole of government that also provides a commitment to healthcare, and that's in the development of new healthcare facilities, hospitals, rehab hospitals, regional, and also in Dublin. And then the third major reform piece is around the health service capacity review, which is really analysing the demand for health services in the future and the capacity required in the system. So there is, as I said, a very clear, dedicated reform platform that has been established for Ireland.
Okay, that's excellent. So David, you've seen health programs and been involved in developing health programs in other places. You're here to specifically talk about, or at least help with the National Children's Hospital. But broadly speaking, I mean, what are the key challenges, if you like, of healthcare for Ireland at the moment?
Yeah, and look, as Joe said, what Ireland's trying to do at the moment is pretty ambitious. I mean, you're investing heavily. You know, the system is growing. Healthcare costs are rising dramatically. Diseases in populations are increasingly a challenge, particularly chronic diseases as we all get older and we all age. So the Irish healthcare system is trying to tackle all of that at the same time as it's trying to embrace and pick up what the rest of the world is doing, where healthcare is going, what the trends are, and what do they look like? Well, largely speaking, we are seeing quite a big jump in the way technology plays its part in healthcare. Now, that's one of the things that we'll be talking about over the next couple of days. So for these three reform programs that are underway, how is the Irish healthcare system going to embrace some of the new technologies that are happening? How are you building into the infrastructure development, modern construction techniques, modern approaches to keeping infrastructure flexible? And how are we going to embrace and get the change in the culture and the practices in healthcare to meet those forward going needs? And they're all quite big challenges. I've seen a lot of evidence that the Irish teams are embracing those really well. But the next couple of days will be an opportunity for us to just talk about those in a little bit more detail with colleagues.
Okay, so Frank, I'll just come to you. I mean, David's outlined kind of what the key challenges are, both mm-hmm. here and I suppose globally in terms of, you know, what's happening in health. You've seen a lot of those challenges, or at least dealt with them in programs you've been involved in Australia and elsewhere. I mean, what are the critical aspects? What needs to be done to make healthcare systems work better?
Well, I think we need to go back to sort of very basic things. We have to drive better performance for patients. So patient safety is always going to be, you know, a key driver. We're seeing patients becoming, and families and communities, much more aware and much more driving, you know, acting as consumers rather than patients, and demanding greater transparency about, you know, their outcomes and their experience. And we're now seeing, you know, health is, as an industry, is pivoting from being really doctor and healthcare provider driven to being patient driven and family driven. So, you know, we're very keen on the concept of participatory health, which really puts the patient, the family and the community in the centre of healthcare, and providers around that. Digital is often a interesting topic to discuss, because people are often a bit afraid of the concept, or it seems to be a bit nebulous, but we've always got to remember that digital technologies, whether that's artificial intelligence or the use of data value streams, or if you're talking about automation, connectivity and communication, they're all about being enablers to provide better care for people in their homes, away from hospitals, where it's much more pleasant and much more safe. In the hospital sector, as Dave's mentioned, you know, we have far, far increasing costs of healthcare, and we need to be able to somehow curb that cost growth curve. You know, health executives globally are struggling with how to deliver better value healthcare, better value for patients, and be able to, you know, fund that appropriately. And we're also seeing, you know, governments often have agendas around performance as well. So that might be cost, financial performance, but things like wait list and things like that. So healthcare executives globally, you know, have these triple challenges of improving patient safety experience, doing it with the best possible value and cost, and also, of course, you know, meeting operational requirements. And in Ireland, the added challenge of commissioning this major infrastructure, which in of itself is a major challenge for everybody. And we've got to do that again within budget, but also make it as safe as possible for patients.
Great. I mean, going back to you, David, I mean, you're nodding your head and reacting to a lot of that. I suppose, are the challenges that are faced by healthcare and the hospital sector different from those that are faced by other industry sectors? I mean, we talk about technology and transformation, connectivity, and some of the things you were talking about there, and maintaining budget, and, you know, making sure that things are planned thoroughly and delivered, you know, to meet everyone's expectations. Are there different types of challenges for healthcare and hospitals that, you know, with your experience, have you seen that this is some of this is unique to healthcare and hospitals?
There is a uniqueness to healthcare. I mean, that's why I've been in it 30 years and why I enjoy it. And many of the people listening to this will also relate to the subtleties of healthcare. The reality, though, is it is but another industry. It is but another range of services that we provide to patients or consumers in their broadest sense, or that we provide on behalf of communities. So the reality is, no, it's no different. It's just got some complexity, and that complexity we love to revel around in and describe how it's so different that we can't make the changes. Yeah. The journey that healthcare on is accelerating quite fast. I think the last 3 years, Frank used the words digital. I try not to talk too much about digital, but the reality is the use of technology in the way that we facilitate, deliver, and execute on care is changing very rapidly. The way our hospitals tend to work today, and Ireland would be no different to mainland Europe and to many other parts of the world, is no different in being reasonably slow to uptake the full range and gamut of technologies that are out there that we could use to improve outcomes, that we could use to engage consumers in a more fulsome way, that we could use to lower our cost, may I say, and that we could use to future-proof ourselves for the future. And you'll hear lots of people quote different industries, retail industry, banking industry, automotive industry, who've all begun to extract the value from those technologies as we go forward. So part of the big challenge for us as a global community of healthcare professionals and for Ireland is to recognize those technologies, to see where we can apply them today and how we can extract value from them going forward. The thing to always remember, though, is there are patients at the end of this, and patients variously act differently dependent on where you are in your life, what stage of wellness or illness you are in, or what stage of age you're at. And I think we have to recognize that, you know, the healthcare systems that we know and love today are going to be there for a good long, long while to care for people as they fall ill or they go through their life's journey or they meet the challenges of life. But there will be increasingly larger components of our population who will seek to embrace wellness, who will progressively look for ways to involve themselves in preventative measures, who, you know, will start to use and extend the apps around, you know, fitness, who will engage in accessing their medical records online, who will pick up some of these nice new shiny apps that come out on the iPhone, which measure your heart rate and measure a variety of other things. And those things will increasingly contribute to how people will receive care, inform their wellness, in their daily lives, and they'll start to get connected to other parts of what they do in their daily normal lives. And we'll make increasing inroads into how we bring that technology into the outpatient clinics, into the day surgery clinics, into our hospitals, and we'll start to see those things change. It's really topical for Ireland at the moment. Mm-hmm. You are spending so much money on new healthcare infrastructure. My question is, you're spending a commensurate amount of money, aren't you, on thinking through what the technology agenda is going to look like. And when we talk technology, it's not just about apps. It's not about an iPad. It's not always about a telephone. It's about all the other things. It might be a way drugs are actually being developed in the future, or genetics, or many other aspects to what technology might mean. So I'll be really interested to see quite how fast you are tracking here compared to what we see perhaps in Asia, China, for instance. I mean, China has a system called Ping A Good Doctor, which has 150 million registrants on digital care. That's huge, colossal, yeah. more than the whole of the UK, right? And they seem to find a way of making that work. So really interested to see what's happening here in Ireland and how that part of the continuum of care is actually going to start to increasingly impact on what you're doing today.
So Joe, I mean, are we tracking well here? I mean, you know, it is... Is what David's talking about, does that resonate in the Irish context? I mean, I know that, you know, what seems to be happening is there's been a fundamental shift in, well, I don't know if it's fundamental, but certainly a shift in kind of consumer behaviour around health, which is driving kind of a desire for perhaps better outcomes and better treatment and new ways of doing things. Are you seeing Ireland being part of that journey?
Well, I was listening to Dave with great enthusiasm and envisaging the future of healthcare, and particularly at the point where I am in my life, I'm starting to think about how I'm going to engage in the system. So it does, it boils down to what about me, the individual in the healthcare system. What's great about Ireland, it has its clinicians are recognised around the world. You know, they're really good training programs, high quality output from their training programs, and as I said, they're well recognised around the world. That is a very, very important foundation for healthcare systems. Without that, you know, the systems can't fly. I also think in Ireland they've got a very good drive to deliver integrated healthcare systems. So they are understanding, developing and maturing those. And in some instances, that's across the border as well. There's some nice examples of bringing Northern Ireland healthcare services and the Republic of Ireland together. So some great examples where, you know, governance restraints being resolved. And then, of course, as I discussed earlier, there's the lovely commitments and demonstrated commitments to the three areas of reform. So I think that the foundations there are excellent. The commitment to setting clear strategies is certainly there. And then picking up on Frank's points around some of, you know, delivery of those reforms, that's our next commitment in Ireland.
Yeah. I mean, Frank, is there anything from the Australian context, or at least from the part of the world that you're, that's yours, that you can, you know, give us? Is there any reflections on how healthcare has developed in Australia?
Expanding on Dave's point, I think in the 20th century, we saw healthcare as being very much focused around big hospitals. It was disease-centric and provider-centric to a large degree, with probably a great underinvestment in preventative care and wellness. Really, healthcare in the 21st century needs to move away from that hospital-centric model into the community. It needs to be around patients, and it needs to be focused not on sickness but on wellness, as David said. So I think that's really, really important. I think the Australian healthcare sector is quite similar to Ireland in terms of being, you know, largely open access, very similar rates of private health insurance in Australia to in Ireland, and we're certainly grappling with issues around access and the implementation of technology or digital strategies to try and improve outcomes. Mm. I think even just we've used that term a lot, but also defining what outcomes actually means. Because again, you know, in the 20th century, we've termed outcomes being things like cure from disease, survival, you know, lack of complications and things like that. But I think that in the 21st century, we need to get smarter about defining what a good outcome means for patients and families and communities, and then trying to go about purchasing, you know, those good outcomes. And so I think we're going to see funding models changing in the 21st century quite a bit. And the world, around the world, I think everybody is grappling with what is the best way for payers, whether they be insurance companies or governments or individuals, to pay for their healthcare. So those are some of the big issues I think we're seeing.
I mean, it's interesting to try and contemplate the future focus of what health might mean, because I mean it's obviously very difficult to predict what might happen in the future. But one thing, David, which is an undeniable truth, is that we are all getting older, and populations are getting older, and you know that if you like presents a problem that we all engage with at some level. I mean, it's one of the core concepts around this, the fact that, you know, we are dealing with aging populations, and how do we do that better? Is it because consumer the demands of aging consumers are changing? I mean, what how do you position that? What would you say about aging broadly in the context of healthcare?
Yeah, look, it's really important, and that global demographic is huge. It's very significant, and the baby boomers are entering in that zone, which we would have traditionally called aged care or aging, and they're very demanding about what they require. So we have to think really carefully about what we design and develop for the next 50 years. The baby boomers are being followed by a group or a generation or two or three generations who have a very different view about what healthcare might look like for them. So as a baby boomer at the bottom end of the baby boomers, I might be looking at a more traditional package of aged care. My head might be telling me that, you know, I'm going to grow old gracefully and I'm going to end up in a nursing home and I'm going to see my final days in a nursing home. That is not what the next generations think. The next generations think they're going to live forever. They think that they're actually going to be fit and well into their 80s. that they will actually be more embracing of wellness. They will be more embracing of exercise and diet. They'll be more embracing of a lifestyle, which contributes to them having a healthier dotage. And the nature and place location that we're going to receive our aged care is going to change dramatically. So EY undertook some global research last year, and what we actually found that most people planning healthcare look at how old you are and decide what the care package you should have and the location of that care. If you actually start looking at people over the age of 50 and you start considering how they behave, what they think, you actually find that there are six categories of people. And they range from people who just want to follow the traditional path. And they're about 15 to 20% of that group. And of the six categories, two-thirds of those groups actually believe that their aging will be about a new model where they stay at home, that they'll be cared for remotely, that they'll be connected through to healthcare providers. And actually, this is a really important point for people listening. It may not be the traditional healthcare providers that we know of today. It could be a retailer. It could be a life sciences business. It could be a telco. It could be a range of different organizations that we're seeing entering this marketplace. And so I think aging is all bets are off. It is not a foregone conclusion that you will, in your last years of life, end up in a nursing home. There will be nursing homes, and we will see an increase in those because our populations are just growing. But there are now very many other alternatives to preventing the speed or the decline of our health in our aged state to a variety of different solution sets. And again, I would say to the Irish Health Service, you know, how are you embracing how the attitudes and values of people are changing as we go through these generational changes that are hitting us all over the world?
That's fascinating. Mm. And technology is definitely part of that answer. I mean, I'm looking at things like artificial intelligence and the role of robotics and things like that in care and home care and so on, which is undoubtedly fascinating. But Frank, I suppose, can you give us a flavor of, and this is me kind of, I'm trying to get my head around how you approach something like a hospital commissioning project. You know, it's enormous and it's broad, right? And a lot of people, myself included, probably don't realize how EY input into this space. So how, where is the opportunity, if you like, for a company like EY to benefit these programs?
Well, EY actually has a unique offering, I think, to the global market in this space, because EY has the expertise and the ability to assist an organization really from the very, very start of, you know, conceiving of needing a new facility or new infrastructure, through the design and business case phase, the design of clinical models of care, the digital strategy or the technology strategy that might go with that. We can assist organizations with looking at funding models. Then we can help with program management around building of the infrastructure itself. And then finally, the phrase we use is commissioning, which basically means the testing and opening of the new facility, making sure that all the staff are appropriately trained, that the equipment works, that it's actually all online. And then, of course, there's move day when you actually start moving patients in and operating the hospital thereafter. So that can be a 10-year journey, and it can involve many thousands of staff. At a CEO level, really it's about having in the right hand a really good project plan that tells you exactly what needs to happen on what day, and we call it a critical path, and making sure that everybody, that, you know, it's sometimes 1,000 people who are involved in the project, clinicians, engineers, architects, technology people, they all know, you know, their role. And in your left hand, you've got a risk matrix or a risk register where you really understand what the risks might be, what could go wrong, and what you need to do before it goes wrong to make sure you've mitigated those risks. And it's a really fascinating thing to do. It's for many people who are involved in the commissioning of a hospital, it's a once in a generation or a once in a career opportunity to make a real difference to care in their region. A new hospital is not just a building, but it's often the centre of a community. It's often the largest employer in a community, and it's often loved by the community. So to be able to shape that and make sure that that facility is not just a building, but it is actually the heart of the healthcare delivery in that region is really, really important. But above all, you know, it's got to be on budget, it's got to be on time, and it's got to be safe.
Yeah. So that, you know, that's easy, right?
Yeah.
Joe, is it? I mean, I don't know.
you know, Rupert, I think it's fascinating to hear Frank say that. EY is really experienced in helping miners open mines, airports being opened, many very big complex projects around the world, the Olympics and many others. But I have to say, opening a hospital where there's patient care at the end of it, you know, that day one when that operating theatre opens, it's never been operated in before, and that first surgeon walks in that door and he's trusting that everything in that building works to ensure the safety of that patient. There is nothing more critical than opening and commissioning a hospital.
I suppose briefly, Joe, is there an opportunity here for Ireland? I mean, it feels like there is. It feels like we have a deficit in terms of our healthcare provision. Would you broadly agree with that, or do you prefer to position it another way?
Well, I was just humoured listening to Frank. Frank and I have worked together on a hospital commissioning program in the past, and I remember that mantra, and I have repeated it many times, and some of the listeners will remember me saying, schedule in one hand and risks in the other. That program management schedule is rigor is absolutely essential. I am curious that we have talked for quite a while now and we haven't touched on the topic of affordability or cost. And it's interesting because I think historically that's where conversations have come from. But if the listeners notice, we talk about safety and quality. And that's where I'd probably put back to both Dave and Frank to talk to us a little bit more about why we no longer really focus on costs and why is it safety and quality?
Well, I think that we still do talk about cost, but I think there is a growing realisation and greater evidence that high quality care with the fewest complications and the less harm and the better the experience for patients, the more efficient healthcare is and the lower the cost. So as a clinician but also a health service chief executive, I always had as my primary goal making sure that we were delivering the highest quality care and that we were ensuring patients were as safe as they possibly could be, because I always believed that if you did that, then your systems and processes would be better and you would deliver greater value and you would be probably better on budget as well. Having said that, when you're talking about commissioning a new hospital, there are fascinating discussions we could have around projecting what the new facility is going to cost to run, understanding the nuances of the workforce build, and ensuring that when you open the hospital, you understand what it's going to cost the community to operate it. And that might sound obvious, but as I said before, it can often be a 10-year time frame between the earliest business cases being written and the value being conceived, and then the doors opening later and actually having to operate the hospital. A lot can change in that time. And I think that you do need to have a rigorous process where you calculate in advance all your costs and work out how you're going to operate the hospital, because you want to make sure that you're generating the most value from that asset.
So Frank's right. I mean, the challenge, and I do not believe that any responsible government is just going to invest in major pieces of infrastructure without being very cognizant of the cost of them. That would be the pattern across the world. Healthcare costs are expanding greatly wherever we go in the world. I have to say there is a trend towards making sure that new infrastructure, capital infrastructure, is actually more appropriately skewed towards community. And this is a great place for Ireland because you've been investing in your integrated care program. You're ahead of the game, actually, in this thinking about this. But when you come, any country comes up for replenishing its traditional assets, which you have been in here in Ireland, then you're thinking really carefully about how does the care pathway change? How does the model of care, how do you embrace new solutions? I mean, EY is very well versed in this. I mean, we have programs to help organizations using robotics, robotic process automation, we would call it. Generally, the notion of automation, where does analytics, where does technology play its rightful part in reducing and lowering the cost burden of healthcare? And I think quality and safety, as Joe mentioned, it's not just a fad. It's a very inherent part of now every healthcare system in the world, that we are appropriately caring for people and that we're cognizant of safety. And that means that we do things to people when we know that it's right to do it and that we can get the best outcome. In fact, we've talked about this in our New Horizons publication. I'd like people to keep an eye out for that. They can find it on the CHKS website, the EY main, ey.com under health. We publish it next week, and we've got a number of examples in there around where we believe the sustainability factors in healthcare are coming from. We do talk about technology. We've talked about it a little bit today. It's not all about technology, but that's a really important part of it going forward. But also the role of consumers going forward and the role of new infrastructure of all types, new assets in the healthcare industry, and what the industry is looking like in terms of other entrants wanting to play a rightful part in there. So have a look out, everybody, for New Horizons. It'll explain a little bit more about what we've spoken about today, highly relevant to this conversation. And that's coming out on the 2nd of October. And then we're following this up in November with a launch of EY's strategy for how we will help our clients engage in this very agenda going forward.
David Roberts, Frank Daly and Joe Carden, thanks for joining the EY Ireland Business Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
The EY Ireland Business Podcast is recorded as part of the EY Ireland Podcast Network.